Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here, not only on Renegade Radio, but on Steel Waves Radio, as well as YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all your podcast catchers, Apple. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark. My co-host Hannah is, she'll be joining us by audio a little bit later, but right now I'm looking straight ahead at the original Manic Pixie Dream Girl, everybody's 80s crush. You know her from Better Off Dead, Last American Virgin. We're going to get into more of her horror stuff, Diane Franklin.
Hello, bonjour, cheers, however you know me.
You never get tired of talking French, do you?
No, I love this. It's very nice. I'm very happy to be sometimes French.
I'm sure you've been to Paris, and you've been to Cannes, you've been to France, right?
I have been to France. I love Paris. I actually was inspired to do the French accent when my parents took me on a vacation when I was 10 to Quebec. So It's kind of bizarre that, I mean, that's just when I first heard it and it made such an impression on me. It just stuck in my ear. It was the first time I think I heard a dialect. Having come from Long Island, I should have heard it there. I didn't hear anybody talking like this when I was there. So,
you know,
when you grow up in a place, you don't hear the dialect, but then you step away and you went, go, wow, I hear it. So, yeah, I really learned, that's where I first was inspired. But
and your parents spoke German, as we learned last time you were on the show.
Yeah, they spoke like German, and I could never hear their accents when I was growing up. They always... I didn't understand them sometimes. But I had a very deep interest in what they were saying, because they always, you know, whenever they got into the deep conversation, they would speak in their native language, and that's when I would be like, "What are they saying?"
Yeah. Well, there's that smile that everybody loves. Hannah was saying that I hope we can do a video with you because of your smile, and there it is. Diane Franklin's here, and people are so much more excited that you're on this show today in 2020 than when you were on the show last time in 2018, which I thought was a great show and a great interview.
That is wonderful. And I think, you know, I have a lot of, I have really a lot of great energy. And I, especially during this time now, during the pandemic, it is really helpful to be around positive energy and good things. And I'm very flattered that people want to see what's going on with me. I always have something going on.
Oh, I'm sure. I can't wait to hear it.
I'm full of surprises. And I have to say, it's kind of a funny thing, because I'm one of those people that you might know part of me, but there's always something more.
Oh yeah.
And not always what you expect. And that I think is what I feel is exciting. Like when I write my books and the information I'm passing on, I'm not one of those people that is just one note. I have a lot of depth, a lot of range. So, but I think that most people do. We just don't show it, right? So as an actress, I go, okay, well, you're going to see it in my work, and you're also going to see it in when you interview me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, trust me. I was looking forward to interviewing the first time, and there was so much more to you. And then we just scratched the surface. So that's why I'm glad you're back for another hour. I thought we had exhausted the Last American Virgin conversation, but that's the one everybody was saying, oh, from Last American Virgin. So I think there's a couple things to revisit there. But before we get going, okay. I used to have two sponsors. Now I have four.
Oh,
real quick, Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, you get either two books or one book and two Audible originals and a 30-day trial, which you can cancel anytime within the 30 days. And you keep the books, you keep the Audible originals. You used to be on the road all the time and on film sets, so I'm sure you listen to audiobooks all the time.
Yes, but also Audible, contact me. Why don't I do a reading of my books? That could be cool.
I suggested that last time. You should.
Cool. Yeah, come on, Audible. Contact me.
I don't know if they got to
get my email.
I will contact the people at Audible and try to get that going for you.
Good. I'll read some on your show if you like. That would be cool.
Anytime. I would love that. I wish we had thought of that, but and also we got Doomy's Home Cooking. Best vegan food.
Next sponsor.
Yeah. Doomy's Home Cooking, the best vegan food you ever had. If there's anybody that's suffering more than us artists here in the quarantine, it's restaurants. And Doomy's Home Cooking is 1253 Vine Street in Hollywood. They've also got a store in Culver City, one in Toronto. They've got takeout. They've got pulled pork, all vegan, hamburgers, all vegan, Mexican food, all vegan.
What is this called? Because my son is vegan. So what is it called?
Your son probably knows about Doomies Home Cooking. Doomies.
Mies. Doomies. Okay, got it.
Vegan comfort food. They have vegan fried chicken. They put a piece of wood in instead of the bone. But if I put it in front of you, I didn't say anything, you'd be like, this is great, but it's vegan. So, biggest flautas I ever had. The burritos are amazing. Also, the nachos were one of the 10 best nachos in L.A., the only one without meat. So, do me something.
I'm looking for the fried chicken.
Oh, you love the fried chicken. 1253 Vine Street. Also, there's one in Culver City and one in Toronto, Canada. Just help Phil. He's a culinary genius, and help him stay open. And we're also sponsored by Hustler and Spy Associates. I'll have codes on the show. You get 20% off either one of those. So,
nice.
I didn't want to get to the specifics of which child of yours likes Hustler, but seeing some of the videos of your daughter, I have a feeling who it might be. But and I like those videos. I think they're funny.
Oh, my gosh. She is hilarious.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
We're going to get to that a little bit, but before we do... And she's your twin. I don't know how this happened, but the two of you together are like twins. It's amazing. But I'm not the first person to tell you that.
Well, I love the fact that, you know, it's such an amazing thing when you have a child and then you see, like, I see her and I see so much of my husband in her, but when I see us together, or I'll see an old picture, or I'll see a picture of her, and I'll go, whoa, Olivia, I thought that was me. Or she'll come into the room, and I'll be like, whoa, like, that's me when I'm looking back in time. So it is cool. Like, I do see what people see. It's like, I go, whoa.
I think it's a smile. I'm not sure what it is, but it's there's definitely, I don't know what your husband looks like, but it doesn't look like there's a lot of him in there. It's a lot of you, which is good.
No.
So I'm sure he's a very, very handsome guy, but... Anyway, before this quarantine, the last concert I went to was, there was an 80s show at the Microsoft Theater with Granorama, Missing Persons, Flock of Seagulls, MC Hammer, and who comes out with Richard Blade in her Better Off Dead coats but my friend Diane Franklin?
So you were in the audience.
I was
you
in the audience.
Know.
I was.
You didn't even know. Yeah, what a surprise, right?
It was kind of a surprise, but it fit right in. I mean, you were you're a big star in the 80s. Why not?
Well, it's very funny because when they have those shows, like I did one with Kimberly Kate a couple of years ago where we came out on stage together. And this time they were like, they're not sure. You know, whenever they do those shows, it's so much about time and if they have the opportunity. So,
right.
And it was very much like, well, if you'd like, I can come out and do this. And I just think it's really fun for the audience. You know, it's just great to, like, see somebody, and then it brings back memories, and I'm supposed to add that since I have the coat, and so I thought, okay, let's just make this happen. So they were very cool about it, and Richard Blade was really awesome, and I have to say, if you've never been to any of these 80s events, I know that it's crazy right now with the quarantine. I have to say I'm really, really grateful and glad I did them before the quarantine, and hopefully we'll be able to do them in the future, so whenever, but
right.
It's so much fun, and I have to say, if you're of our generation, you know, going back to these events, it's better than a high school reunion. It's bad, you know what I mean? It's like you're around people that you actually have common interests with, and
right.
It was such an upbeat decade that you wind up, you just love the energy. It is a very upbeat energy when you go to these 80s events. So I was somebody who wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm part of the 80s, but honestly, when I was in the 80s, it was very hard for me to experience the 80s because I was creating it, like I was in it and I was working. Mm-hmm. So I never went to concerts when I was younger. So now I'm making up for it, you know, and it's really fun.
It was a crazy concert because they had a rotating stage, so as soon as one band finished, the other band would tune up and rotate.
It was super cool.
What did you think of the response that you got from the audience? They definitely knew who you were.
I was shocked. I mean, again, you know, I never take for granted, and especially as actors, you know, as time goes by, you can have a person who's incredibly well known and, you know, younger people go, who's that? You know? So I think because maybe a lot of people, well, first of all, in that particular audience, it was the older generation who remembered me. And that was, I was just so grateful. And I'm just so happy that I can bring happy memories to people. So I, how I felt, I was blown away.
It wasn't entirely that generation either. Cause I was up in the nosebleeds. And there were a lot of young people that knew you.
Oh, that's really great. It makes me all teary-eyed. That's like amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I think with family sharing the film as it goes down, and then of course there's always these wonderful film aficionados, like the people who love film, and they go back in time and they go, I want to see all these films, and those are the ones that are just so, that's super cool. When right. when I'm at a convention or something, and they come up and they go, I've seen your film, and you know, or even. What's a fun thing is that even like with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures, they're going to do another one. So that's created more interest in that. And that's really cool to have come out too. So, but see, here's the thing that's really interesting. I am doing acting now, but I love the 80s. So I really love the fact that people remembered me from that time. If they're remembering me from anything, like, yay, you know,
right.
And it's just not to be taken for granted. So I am always grateful about that.
Well, and speaking of that, though, I did go last year. I went to the inaugural and probably only 80s in the Desert in Las Vegas. And you were supposed to be there, and you weren't. What happened?
Okay, so 80s in the Desert, it's a very funny story. I was invited to go to 80s in the Desert, and usually I show up at 80s in the Sand, which has been in the Dominican Republic. This year, supposedly, we'll see what happens.
Right.
It's in Mexico. They moved locations. Beautiful, like near Cozumel, gorgeous place. And I'm supposed to go to that. We'll see. So, but the 80s in the Desert, I actually teach kids and I direct musicals
right.
and I direct plays for kids. Right. And I actually had a musical to put on for my students. And I think this is fascinating. You know, I teach, like you know me, Diane Franklin, but I actually teach thousands of kids a week.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands, not just like 10, a thousand. So I teach so many kids, and then this is an example of like something that I've done. And so I couldn't let the kids down. So I told them I may or may not be able to do it. But here's the fabulous irony, like the cool part of this story. So who was there but Robert Hayes, okay?
Robert? Yeah, I saw him from Airplane, yes.
All right, so Robert Hayes is from Airplane, okay. Robert Hayes, he's like the handsome guy who says the Shirley line, you know, like Shirley, you can't
he's
be
a, he's
junkie,
a,
right?
the lead actor in Airplane, and he's been in
yes.
many other things.
Yeah. So I wanted to meet him really badly, and I didn't know he was at that convention, and I didn't even know that they had contact with him. And he was actually invited to 80s in the Sand the year before, but didn't go because
right.
I think of the whatever was going on in the Dominican Republic. Anyway, turns out the reason why I wanted to meet him is because his son is dating my daughter.
Oh, really?
Yes. And they started dating, and I found out, and I was like, well, this is going to be kind of a great opportunity to meet your dad, this guy's dad, because I'd met him. So, it was hilarious. And unfortunately, I couldn't meet him, but my daughter was dating this guy for months, and that is his dad. She's still dating him.
Okay.
And so then I wound up meeting him actually at this guy, his name is Jake Hayes. He is a musician, and he was playing at a club, and he invited me to come. And I finally met his dad at the club watching him. And I also met his mom at the club.
Yes.
And his mom is Cherie Curry from The Runaways.
Yes.
So it's like an 80s apocalypse.
My head's exploding with 80s-ness.
Right? It's like too, super duper. I mean, I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm looking at it like, okay, like these two kids have been brought up with the 80s.
Yes.
I mean, where do you find, and like for them, like to meet, the kismet of that is hilarious. And it's just so cute and so funny. So we have so much in common. So it's just bizarre. You know, you just never know. I mean, it was seriously like,
that was weird. It's
yeah.
Was there anybody in the club going, It's the guy from Airplane and the girl from Better Off Dead and the girl from Run. They're right over there.
Right, right. It's super funny, right? It's like, what is happening, right?
Wow. I mean, it would have been sad if the crowd started congregating towards the three of you and ignored the band, but of course that didn't happen.
No, of course. Nobody knows who we are then, you know, in like the group, you know, everyone knows, you know, Olivia and they know, you know, Jake, but they don't, you know, who's those old people? But no, we have a great time, but it's really cool because I can tell these stories on your podcast. This is not common knowledge. This is, you can only hear about stuff like this.
Yes,
through.
Only on the Dark March, nobody.
Yeah, Dark March. I mean, seriously, it's like, it's such a, when Olivia told me that that was who the dad was and it all came together and I was like, this is like, I appreciate the kismet of it. You know, I'm so into the, like, now we should get them to go to 80s in the stand. Let's get Cherie over here and let's get, you know. So anyway, I just always think like in terms of the fans would flip out. I mean, that's.
You could have an 80s convention in your house.
Hmm?
You can have an 80s convention in your house.
I could. I could just invite all the friends. It's like, you know, have everybody come over. I always had an idea. It would be really cool to do an 80s, like a Babe of the 80s convention. You know, wouldn't that be cool? To have all the actresses who were, like, considered babes at a convention. And even if, you know, you were an older babe, younger babe, you know, whatever. Just, it would be kind of a fun.
Sure.
So, somebody out there, make it happen.
Well, I will tell you that I'm sure... Well, Robert Hayes told you, honestly, you didn't miss much at the 80s in the desert, and that's why it's probably not going to happen again. However, I did get to meet Julia Montgomery from Revenge of the Nerds, and I had her on the show, and we've become friends. And
she's great, right?
Just like you, she doesn't age. She looks beautiful as ever.
Yes, yeah, she's lovely. I have another thing that's kind of cool. When I met Julia, yeah. I actually flipped out because... When I was a kid, she was on a show called, a soap opera called As the World, no, she was on One Life to Live. And I used to watch that as a teenager, so I didn't even know her from the movies. I just knew her from the soap opera, which was funny. So I had a, you know, I was all like, oh my gosh, it's Julia.
And did she come back at you? Oh, I remember you when I was a kid from the Dr. Pepper commercials and all the other stuff.
Right. Yeah, she came back and she was like, well, I think she liked Better Off Dead, you know, so that was kind of funny. But we did not meet until now. I mean, until, you know, 2000s, that's one of the reasons why I really like the conventions, because you get to see people that you never, like when I went on an acting job, when I was working in the 80s, I would go for an audition and maybe I would be competing with, you know, whatever, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh or, you know, Demi Moore or whatever, if I was competing with people, I would never see them because we had come in at different times.
Right.
So all the actresses who were sort of the actresses that I may have been up with, I've never got to meet. Or they would hire, you know, just one girl, so you'd never meet, like Molly Ringwald. You never meet those other actresses. So that's why I really like these conventions, because I can go and I can say, oh my gosh, it's, you know, it's Catherine Mary Stewart, or it's... gosh, who else have I seen? I just talked to her recently. Tawny Katane.
Yes.
I just met Tawny. I met Tawny at 80s in the Sand, but I didn't know that Tawny, I didn't totally forgot she was in Bachelor Party, and I actually auditioned for Bachelor Party and got a call back.
Did you audition for that part or the nice girl?
Yes, the lead. Isn't that bizarre? So you just never know. You know, we were all auditioning at the same time for things. You know, I was auditioning for Karate Kid, and I was screen tested. It was like between me and two other girls, and Elizabeth Shue wound up getting it. So it's very cool, like, to know that we were all sort of at the same time auditioning, and now when we see each other, it's like, oh my gosh.
So when people meet you, when people like that meet you, when other 80s actresses meet you, they know you from usually Better Off Dead, or, are they aware of you?
Yes. They are. I think there's enough time has passed where we've all been going through all the films.
Yes.
And, you know, everyone's seen other films. I think it's very cool. Some actresses, like, a lot of them love Bill and Ted's. A lot of them love Better Off Dead. I think that's probably their favorite. Because Monique is a great role model. It's, like, an awesome character. And I think, personally, my favorite, which is why I'm writing a book about it. now, which is a whole other thing.
That's why I refer to you as the original Manic Pixie Dream Girl, and I was the first one to say this. I don't know if you ran that across your daughter, but that is a term now. It's a trope in movies.
Wow.
That he meets a woman that basically, it's just a slacker guy that meets a woman that fixes him up. I mean, you think like Knocked Up, you think of like other movies.
Yeah.
You know, that have come up, you know, every romantic comedy in the
last
20 years. It's basically a slacker guy and an amazing woman that falls in love with him and puts him on the right track.
Well,
she's usually a little wacky, a little...
Funny. That is funny. And wait, what do you call it again? I remember you coining it. It was
Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Manic Pixie.
Manic Pixie is that she's a little weird. She's a little
High
she's
energy.
A little energetic, and she fixes the man up.
Yeah.
And
well, you know, I'm glad that that's a thing because it's a real archetype, you know, and it is very, you know, it's great that that's like a thing. I didn't even.
Yeah, it was the movie Elizabethtown. Somebody did a review of that with Kirsten Dunst was the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Oh.
And then
they
just kind of retrofitted it to a lot of movies. So now I was surprised. I was on. I was going through last couple of weeks. I've been going through a Diane Franklin wormhole, and I saw that Siskel and Ebert did not like Better Off Dead.
Amazing, right? And, well, it's actually not amazing. Again, I've always had this theory that, you know, at that time, you know, you had your $8, where are you going to spend it? You know, and they could not say that that was going to be they couldn't say it was a great film, because if you had to choose between that and Officer and the Gentleman, you know, you're going to have to, you know, they have to have their distinction to get people to watch the very high-end films. I just think the comedies didn't have the support and the voice at the time that would allow it to be a hit. It was the timing, you know?
Yeah, well, I think what it was, if I'm recalling correctly, is that they, at the time, there were so many teen comedies. I think they were pretty much probably up to here with all the Porky's ripoffs and everything. And but Better Off Dead's not a Porky's ripoff. That's
relating to it, you know, they might have, I mean, if you're reviewing it, there's so many ways that you can go, well, you know, that's not, you know, that's amateurish or childish or I don't know. I mean, you can go to that place. But if you just want to have a good time, it's hilarious. I don't know. You tell me.
I think it's great. I've always said that. And I think what their main issue was, I think it was the repetition of the jokes. They actually said, you know, John Cusack was wonderful in The Sure Thing, but and then they showed the scene where the mother makes French fries and French bread, and they're like, oh, she was in True Grit. Look at her now. I'm like, wow. They were pretty mean to it.
Yeah, seriously. Like, I don't know. I'm glad that you brought that up, because it just goes to show that when something comes out, it's not the all end all of it. I mean, look at Troll 2. You know what I mean? Or Troll, right? Troll 2 or Troll. One of those films iconic film now. So it is what it is to its generation. And that changes as time goes on.
Well, they were another generation, too, so.
Yeah, what?
They were another generation, too. They were, like, in their 40s or 50s at the time, so.
Yeah.
I don't think they were really looking for that, but.
Right. I mean, Siskel and Ebert were the most, like, revered, you know, like, oh, wow, what did Siskel and Ebert say? But, you know, they, in their sense, had their own fame. And so some people listened to them and some people would not, you know, would not. Or maybe at a certain point it was just, I mean, certainly Better Off Dead found its audience when the audience could make up their own mind. And when people would, that was college, where people would pass videos and DVDs. I don't know if they had DVDs, but they passed the videos from person to person.
Well, I mean, I think VHS, then DVDs, then streaming.
Right.
I watched it a couple weeks ago, and I touched on this last time, but I should have expounded on it. To me, it's like an all-star 80s movie. Everybody's in it. Curtis Armstrong's in it from The Revenge of the Nerds. John Cusack, you're from The Last American Virgin. Porky from Porky's is in it. Taylor Negron's in it. Like, everybody from the 80s is in this movie. The girl from Fast Times.
Right.
That was the Judge Reinhold's girlfriend is in this.
I know. Oh, and that brings me in. That's an interesting thing you just said. Yeah, it is a like a, it's a like a treasure chest of 80s people. Right. And the other thing which I love is, and this was like the main thing, it's so wholesome. Like, it's not, there's nothing gratuitous. So you can watch it with family. Like, you can show it to everyone, which is not all the 80s teen films, you know.
Was it PG or was it R-rated?
I think it was PG-13, and then it, or now maybe it's PG, but I think it was maybe PG-13, and I think that was only because it was about suicide, technically, right?
Right.
So you have to be able to understand, I mean, I work with kids, so I think at a certain point, when people, you know, kids don't understand irony, they're really little, they don't understand the irony yet. Like, first it is, an object is what it is, and then you figure, oh wait, now I can have an opinion about the object and I can turn it. So in that case, you have to be old enough to get, oh, that they're being sarcastic, or they're being, you know,
I can see, I mean, people won't get the Howard Cosell references, but they'll get most of it.
Oh, they were so good. They were great. I love the movie too, because there's so many different aspects of it. Like Danny coming up and then jumping after the balloon, like the background stuff. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
You know, when you watch a film, it's not just, you can watch it many times because there's a lot of stuff going on that's tiny that you can pick up.
And how much of your own skiing did you do?
How much what?
Of your own skiing did you do?
Oh, they didn't let me do a lot of the skiing. Because at that time, you know, they didn't encourage actors to do their own stunts because they didn't want them to break their leg and then not be able to perform.
Right.
Which, by the way, does happen, because when I was up for Amadeus, I was up for it in screen testing for it because Meg Tilly broke her leg during the filming, in mid-filming.
Right.
And they had to recast her. So it does happen.
It still happens. Okay? The lead really actress in that show, Batwoman, just quit because she injured her back. And they said that's not officially the reason, but I'd quit too if that happened.
Yeah. No, you. I mean, what are you going to do? So they don't like it if you do your own stunts. Although, you know, I mean, some people probably are proud of it, or they like to do it, or they make some
Tom Cruise, your 80s comrade.
Yeah. It's like, if you're like, you know, person's like, I'm all about that, and you're skilled at it, well, you know, cool. I like to do my own stunts, you know, that's cool. But you better know what you're doing, you know.
Sure.
And in Better Off Dead, I did some of the skiing because I do ski. I actually ski, but not that great in and out dance, you know. So I would like ski into a shot or ski out of the shot, or, you know.
You weren't skiing backwards or anything like that?
Nah, I couldn't do the backwards.
Okay. It's weird because this movie is set, I finally figured out it was set in Northern California. Which is kind of foggy to me, because all of my friends that love this movie, most of them are from the East Coast. Jersey, love it.
I would love it too. Yeah, because for some reason, and I don't know why, skiing movies are, you don't find a lot of skiing movies with a story.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's skiing, like videos, documentaries, but so I know, being an East Coast girl, that I would have loved seeing some skiing, because that's what you do on the East Coast, you know?
Yeah.
I will say something interesting, which it kind of, because you brought up Last American Virgin before. Okay, so Better Off Dead is the same thing in the sense that there's this story going on, but all of a sudden we're in a winter place, or it's near Christmas time, right?
Right.
And so we have so East Coast gets to see what a summer Christmas, West Coast summer Christmas, no, not summer, winter Christmas is.
Right.
And in Virgin, there was the scene where it was Christmas time, and I had just had an operation of some sort. I'm not going to say what it is in case the audience doesn't know. And Gary comes over, and he walks up to me with a Christmas tree and a bag of oranges.
Right.
And people have always said to me, why does he have oranges? And it was to establish that we were in California. And it was a California Christmas. And in the remake of Lemon Popsicle, I'm going way back now, he also, the same film, Lemon Popsicle is the same film as Last American Virgin, he walks in with a watermelon. And I don't, that was, so it's this, they remade it, but the oranges are to represent that it was in California.
It was the original Israeli director, and it takes somebody, an outsider, to pick up on something like that. I don't think a Californian would think about that.
Yeah, no. So just, there's a whole bunch of little tiny things you just learned there. So
yeah,
anyway.
So there's skiing in California in both movies.
But yes, yeah, there was. You're right.
You ambushed me last time on the show, and I'm so glad that you did, because you brought the coat from Better Off Dead, and you said, "Put it on, I'll take a picture of you." And I'm a big guy; it fit me with plenty of room to spare. Why did you have such a large coat?
You know, that was an inspiration by the costumer. We were shopping for clothes for Monique, you know, looking for style. I remember going shopping with him. We went to the mall and we were at Nordstrom. I think we got this coat at Nordstrom. We saw it on a mannequin, and it was, I guess, like, it could have been a guy. It was a guy coat. And the costumer had the inspiration, that would be a cool idea for Monique. So that's where the oversized thing came from, is like, I put that coat on and all of a sudden it was hilarious, right? It made me look like I was that big.
Yeah, such a petite woman in a large coat.
Dying coat, yeah. So when I, so this is so cool that you did that, because all those photos, when I go to conventions, I've taken pictures of people wearing the coat. Now in my book that I'm working on, that is, to me, the tribute book to Better Off Dead. And I'm trying to get interviews from all the actors. We'll see how many I get back. I'm working on it. And this book is my third book. So, but I'm trying to put all the people wearing the coat in my book, because truly Better Off Dead is, you know, it's only good as the fans, right? You know, if you remember it, it's awesome. So I want to have this book be about the making of it, but also about the fans and like how great they are and how they remember that. And it's just a fun, not a lot of actors have memorabilia from the films, but in this case I was able to, and you're going to love it. It's going to be cool.
I can't wait. Trust me, that's going to be, if you get it out by Christmas, I know a few people that are going to get that as Christmas gifts.
But, nice. It's going to be great. It's so cool.
But have you interviewed any actors for it? Have you?
I have gotten interviews from Amanda, and I'm waiting on Curtis. Danny, I might get an interview from him. I've gotten one from, I think, the girl who was wearing the braces.
Okay.
She said to me, and I got an interview from Aaron Dozier, who played the bad guy. I forgot.
Oh, the blonde bad guy.
Aaron, right, yeah. And I haven't approached John yet, but I figure I'll just throw it out there. And Savage sent me so much cool information.
Oh, really?
That I didn't even know. So
what's one thing
so
you didn't
cool.
know, Diane?
Yeah.
Tease us. Mm-hmm. What's one thing you didn't know that Savage Steve had in his pocket?
Oh gosh, because he sent me so much information. Okay, so, well, let's see, because I'm trying to think of something that he hasn't been in other interviews. Now I'm blanking. You put me on the spot.
That's okay. If you think about it later, that's fine.
All right, I'll think about it. But he sent me, I mean, literally, I think he sent me like 30 pages of information. That is so cool. And I just have to say that his love for the film, because it was his first film, and he, you know, when you write and direct your own stuff, that is the most beloved of your work. You know, you can direct other people's things, but when it's your own, and this was his first, it was his baby, it's just really cool to see all the memories he has and what we, as you know, what we actors went through. I mean, I knew it was special when we did it. I knew the film was special.
I'm a fan. I would actually love to interview Savage Steve, because I love One Crazy Summer. I love Better Off Dead. I haven't seen How I Got into College in a long time, but he had a style, and it was funny.
Yeah, no, he is. He is so funny. And the great thing about him, which I think shows through the film, is he's self-effacing.
Yes.
He always, well, he'll like put himself down, but the way he does it is so hilarious and he's so sweet. So he's the only director that I know where the crew absolutely loved him. Like everybody in the crew loved Savage because he was very considerate to all the people that were working and he never put himself on a high pedestal with them. He always was equal with them. So if you're a director, I mean, I just want to say like, that's important to be really good with your crew. They will give more if you are straight up with them as opposed to ruling with fear.
Don't be like William Friedkin, couldn't slap people around, or Oliver Stone, or whatever.
Crazy. Crazy.
I've heard horror stories, but not. I guess it depends on the type of movie you're doing, but But Last American Virgin, aka the story of my life. I was watching a documentary about Friday the 13th. And I was surprised that Lawrence Monsoon, the lead guy in that movie, was in Friday the 13th. One of the Friday the 13th. And I interviewed him now. He's virtually unrecognizable.
That's
have you seen him lately?
You know, I didn't see Friday the 13th, so I should see him in that. I only remember Lawrence from working with him.
No, in the movie he looked the same because it was like a couple years later. But now he finally looks like a man.
Oh yeah, that part.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's so funny, I guess, because I see his eyes and I see him. Yeah, he grew up. Lawrence is like the hot guy now, right? He's not he's not the guy who was the, you know, the guy who didn't get the girl, but you know, now he's like kind of Rick-esque. So yeah, he's looking hot now. You know, I even suggested, you know, at some point, wouldn't it be cool to do a film where it was the both of us now, like a sequel to Last American Virgin, where, you know, he's like this cool businessman and I'm divorced from Rick with, you know, three kids working at Hot Dog on a Stick. And he comes up and he sees me and our eyes meet and kind of cool idea.
Oh, don't give me any ideas. That's a great idea. I might start working on a script right now.
Right. Isn't it? It's kind of interesting. I had some people interested, but you know, we're all moving on to different things. So, but yeah, so I saw him. I actually saw him in conventions, and he looks great.
Yeah, well, I was surprised. I'm like, wow, who's this guy? And then, oh, that's him.
But that's fun.
I think if the movie was done now, they probably would flip flip the leads.
Oh.
And have the blonde guy be the nervous guy, the beta guy, and and Lawrence Monsoon would be the cool guy because all the girls are into nerds now, and he was kind of the nerdier of the two.
You're right. Yeah, it shifts. That is interesting. Yeah, good call.
I mean, look at the guy. I mean, Robert hates his son, notwithstanding. The girls your daughter dates, I'm sure, maybe nerdier than the guys that you dated.
Well, she's funny because we are always interested in the personality of the guy. He's got to have a great personality. To me, it was like, a guy's got to have, this is my list, Diane Franklin's list.
Okay, all right.
Guys that have a great personality, got to make me laugh.
Yeah.
Got to be funny. Has to have a big heart.
Big heart, okay.
Big heart. So, you know, like, love animals and kind. You got to be kind. And
that's what's got to be big, okay.
Yeah. And then here's the interesting part. You got to be straight with me. You got to call it as it is. So, meaning, don't put me on a pedestal and don't make me your mom. I got to be right. Like, it's got to be, you know, like, treat me as a person, real.
So that was the mistake of the guy in Last American Virgin because he put you on a pedestal.
Yeah. Doesn't work that way. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I mean, obviously it's nice in a dating, you know, in a dating situation, you know, when you're just dating, that's fun. You know, like, you're playing different things. But to be married in a relationship, I got to have it straight. So it's kind of funny that my husband, and you know, I never really talk about him, but he actually is a writer, and he for years wrote, I mean, he wrote for St. Elsewhere, Harry and the Hendersons, and then he was the writer for Fairly Odd Parents. So if you see the cartoon Fairly Odd Parents and you see Ray DeLaurentis, that's my husband. And he wrote that for years, and he worked with Butch Hartman. So he is a very funny guy. And he's writing movies now, and so he's just writing and writing. So that's kind of interesting. But for me, like, I find that I like writing a very interesting, you know, I don't know, just interesting people. So, but yes, my daughter, she likes guys. At the beginning of her relationships, I think she was really feeling like she had to be what did you call it? The
Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yeah, Manic Pixie. And I think that's when she started dating, she was starting to do that, you know, where she's trying to help guys. And now she's like, okay, I know that that's not possible.
No more fixer-uppers.
What?
No more fixer-uppers.
Yeah, you can't. It's, you know, people are, you know, here's the truth. You're only going to change when you're ready to change. Sure. It's not that you'll never change, but it's like you have to want to go through it. And I just think that's about when we're ready to move on. And usually you don't move on until something kind of bad happens. That's sometimes how it happens. But she's now find somebody who appreciates her. And he is so cute and so nice and just in the biggest heart and, you know, is funny. And so anyway, she's all happy. And
good for her, yeah. I saw the video of you and her on her Tinder page. Her Tinder profile.
I have to tell you what's going on. There's another thing that goes on between us. So Olivia she has her own Snapchat show, which she's written. She writes, directs, acts, and edits with her comedy partner, Sydney Heller. So they did if you have Snapchat, check out Apocalypse Goals. And you'll see under the series, it'll say AG. Mm-hmm. So she did the first series. It did so well. They did a second season. There you go. And so that hasn't come out yet. So that's up and coming.
But she was directing when she was 12. Am I right with that?
Yeah. Yeah. She's been directing since she was 12 years old. Actually 5, but whatever.
So she's a prodigy.
Yeah. She's a prodigy. She's really, really, really smart. But she's also very emotional. So it's the combination that makes it so special as a artist. Is that she can combine her thinking. She's not all thinking. She has a lot of emotion. So that's why her work is lovely. Lovely. It's beloved. And so she's doing that. And then she also wound up doing a show called Stir Crazy during the quarantine now. So that's another show that's on Snapchat.
Oh, great.
And she's in the process of actually, she has some very, very big people who are interested in her. Maybe, you know, developing a pilot show with Sydney Heller. So
that's great.
Keep your eye on her. Me, I'm
absolutely. Olivia De Laurentiis. So you'll be living off her.
Yeah, yeah. And then my son, he's a musician, and he has an album out called Good Boy, and it's on Spotify. His name is Nick De Laurentiis.
Nick De Laurentiis.
And he is like my artist, my Zen child. He creates such beautiful music. He studied classical music. So his music has so much in it, and it's like poetry. It's deep.
What kind of music? What style is it?
I'd have to say it's indie, but he's got like this first album is based on a lot of natural sounds. So he like went to a church and recorded real church organ music for it, but it's not, you know, religious music. It's just that feeling in it. So the interesting part of, like, he recorded the beach sounds that were really from the ocean. So his music is very authentic, and his voice is very calming. It's really, like, it's beautiful music you can listen to in the car, or you're listening in the background. It's very lovely. So check it out.
I definitely will, yeah. And
let me know what you think, okay?
I will check it out, I promise.
You'll love it.
And I promise. I pinky swear.
Thank you. Pinky
and if anybody knows music, it's you, because Last American Virgin, I was trying to count how many Rock and Roll Hall of Fame groups were on the soundtrack.
Okay. So in terms of rock and roll, then check out Jake Hayes' music, because he's got an 80s flavor. So now check out Jake, Olivia's boyfriend. So like I've got this whole world coming up. It's and believe me, I'm sitting here going, did this just happen? This is really happening. So, and then meantime, I'm doing my own stuff. So
this is like your house is like Warhol's factory.
Yep.
All this art is coming out of this.
Yeah, we're very, very creative. I have a very creative world, very creative people around me. And also, I am the person, I'm at the, like, you know how the mother is supposed to be the person who sort of inspires everybody? I'm the hub of the creativity. Like, I'm the one who goes, you know, follow your dreams, you know, work hard, but, you know, what are you connecting to really, you know? So at some point, I think I'll probably do some kind of book about inspiring others, or an art book for the artists or the actors.
Well, you say you teach acting to kids.
Yeah, I do. And it's incredible because I have a very wide range of how I can teach. I can teach little kids. I know how to connect. So my goal is to bring it to the next generation, whether it's adult actors, kids, filmmakers, directors. Okay. So at some point...
You teach adult actors.
What do I teach? Other actors?
I say you do teach adult actors on occasion.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely. But the reason why I backed off on it is because, you know, as an actress, I don't want them to put me on a pedestal. Like, younger kids who don't know who I am, they're right. going to listen to me and hear me. But if you're an actor who, you know, knows me, I might be talking and you're going to hear it, wah, 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 wah. Right. Like, because you're just like going, oh, my God, it's Diane Franklin. Not that I, you know, right. when I teach, honestly, like, what will happen is, the kids will be like, hey, yay, it's, you know, Mrs. D, you know. But the parents will be like, it's Diane Franklin. Oh, my God. So they're freaking out. They're like, that's the girl in the movie. And the kids are like, what are you talking about, Mom? That's like, whatever.
Yeah, that's just that cool old lady that teaches us acting.
Yeah, no, she likes acting. We just do acting, you know. So, yeah, that's about, like, that's the same thing, you know. Are you talking to the person or are you talking to the memory?
I have a feeling what that's like, but as I said, 5 minutes with you, that all that goes away and the real person shines through. Now,
well, I would have that too if I was talking to, you know, like Robert Redford or Chevy Chase or, you know, like, I mean, older actors who, you know, when my generation were like, wow, you know, and then I would meet them and I would still be like, oh, it's you, like. You know, so
was there a celebrity that you met that was
disappointment?
Since they say don't meet your heroes, and sometimes I'll give you an example of mine, and you give me an example of yours.
All right.
I love Rodney Dangerfield, one of my heroes.
Wow. Okay.
I had a Rolling Stone magazine with him on the cover from 1980. This was towards the end of his life. He had a signing at Tower Records. It's like, I get to meet Rodney Dangerfield. And you could tell he didn't want to be there. They just dragged him there. It was like, and so I was like, hey, Rodney, you're the man. And he didn't even look up. He just, and boom. And like I said, it was towards the end of his life. And who am I, you know, so I don't take it personally, but it wasn't the passing of the torch that I thought it would be.
Yeah.
And what's your story? Come on, let's smile. I know you're thinking of something.
I am. There is someone that I met that I was slightly sad about. I kind of was like, sad.
Is it male and or female?
It's a guy. And I can't say his name.
It wasn't Chevy Chase?
Say it again.
It wasn't Chevy Chase?
No, it wasn't Chevy Chase.
As I hear horror stories about that guy.
Yeah, I hear about that too. That is true. But I will say this. I can't say the person's name, but I will say this. I was genuinely surprised that they were not smiling and making eye contact with me. Because
as you are a master of.
Yeah, because I just was surprised, and I thought, well, you know, not everybody's life turns out to be what they want it to be, or, you know, maybe people have problems that you don't know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I also think it's very hard to be a guy actor, more so than even a woman, in this respect. I mean, women have issues and problems as well, mm-hmm. but I think the hardest part for a guy actor is if you are, like, the guy or like the main actor, and either you're still auditioning or you still, like, you still have to jump through hoops as you're older.
Right.
You know, at a certain point, you must feel like, well, if I'm supposed to be the man, then I don't jump through hoops. Like, I don't do that. Like, it's almost part of the, it's like, it's part of who you are. Like, how do I do this? But how do you survive? You know, like, it's a complicated thing, you know? You know, it's like, imagine, like, being an actor and you're like, hi, I'm, you know, I have to be this masculine, you know, all-knowing, strong kind of character, which is a character. But then the director says, oh, you know, well, thank you very much, you know, or like, we're done with you. And how do you leave that room with dignity? You know, you'd be like, well, beeping you, right? You know, like, how do you deal with that? So I think that's a sort of a difficult situation to be. You have to be a very special kind of personality to understand how, I mean, this part of my advice and how I see actors being is you have to be a very sort of smart and very, you have to understand your persona versus your who you are and not take it personally. You know, you can't take it personally. Like at your job, you get a criticism of something at your job, you can't take it personally. It's your job. Right. It's about your work. It's not about you. No.
What's amazing about you is your personality is your character.
Mm.
I mean, when people meet you, you're look at that smile. You're so nice. I would say probably you and Ron Howard are maybe the two nicest people I've ever met that were stars.
Oh, that was okay. Oh, thank you for saying that. First of all,
and now you're gonna say Ron Howard was a dick
to you.
I love
Ron Howard. I grew up watching him, and I actually got a photo with him years ago, and that's where I kind of got all nervous. I was like, oh, "It's Ron Howard." I'm like, I was like, "Keep it together, hi Ron." You know?
No, I.
So it's so nice of you to say that we were both nice. That's really he's very nice.
I've never said this on air, and I probably shouldn't say it, but I was in a restaurant. I was at the Chop House across the street from Warner Brothers Studios one mm-hmm. night, and he was there with his family, and he went to the bathroom, and like an asshole, which I was like, when am I going to meet Ron Howard? So I went to the bathroom.
You saw the episode of the bathroom.
And I was like, Mr. Howard, I'm not going to shake your hand. We're in the bathroom. I understand you're eating, but I'm just a big fan, and we had like a 5-minute chat in the bathroom and on the way to his table. We had passed my table and he's talking to me like I'm a long lost friend. Like, oh, goth comedian, that's great. You work on that. And he's like, how come you don't do more acting? He's like, well, you know, I got offered this role, that role. I'm like, and I was like, Mr. Howard, I'm gonna let you get back to your family. Like, his daughter was there, big stars. It was for his father. His brother, Clint Howard, big horror movie star. And I was like, he was so nice that I felt like such an asshole for even bothering him. Because he's that nice.
Yeah, but you're also very respectful, which is the other thing, too. I think that's important, you know, that you're like, you know, you give them space, but also, like, that's important. Because, I mean, frankly, you know, everybody wants to be kind of, like, if I didn't know you, I wouldn't be like, hey, man, how's it going? You'd be like, excuse me, you know, Ms. Mark, I have a, you know, question for you. You know, that's really nice.
I guess I approached it pretty nice.
You know? I mean, he's huge, but what 10-year-old knows Ron Howard, right? So that's a gift for him to be remembered as well.
Yeah. Now, where does the time go? Jeez, I could talk to you forever, but I gotta get this out of the way. This is not going to make you smile.
All right.
Why were you not in the Bill and Ted 3?
Oh.
Reprising your role of the princess.
Can you answer that for me? Can anyone who's watching answer this for me? Well, it's not because I didn't want
to. 2 years ago, you said you were in talks, and you were in the loop.
We were. They knew we were in talks. You know, I think that's going to be a very interesting question. I don't have the answer. I would say that the usual answer has been that the director didn't want to go that way. No comment. I don't know. Who has the power over that film to make that decision. Right. But I will say that it's a shame that they couldn't find a place for us to be in it, given how easy we would have made it for them, for the fans. That's the only shame.
Because the wives are in the movie. The princesses are in the movie. The characters.
the characters.
But not the original. And the whole thing is about they're middle aged now, they've got kids.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think it'll be definitely back in discussion, you know, at some point. But I do, I wish the film so much success because it's for the new generation. Bill and Ted are girls now, which gives them, that means like girls can be dudes or cool. Like they don't have to wear high heels. Do you know what I'm saying? Like they can be like kind of Monique-ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. The new princesses, you know, they are funny actresses. I'm glad that they are in the film. If they're going, I mean, they were actresses that are funny. So bravo to the people that they did cast.
I'm casting no dispersions on them, but it should have been you and the other princess.
Well, that's what I like to hear. And I hopefully it'll get people to watch the first Bill and Ted so that we will always be the princess of that people remember. You know, that's my feeling is that if you're going to watch those films, think of Diane and Kimberly as the first princess or the original, you know, I mean, I guess that's all we can hope for, but it was definitely, definitely a heartbreaking and it is, there's some words that can be used for it.
Shitty.
Yeah, that's one of them, but it wasn't the word I was thinking of.
And I've also, man, where's the time going? And unfortunately, Hannah's not going to be able to join us, it looks like. But we got about 10 more minutes, and I really, this is what I wanted to concentrate on, was you're kind of a horror vixen.
I'm a horror vixen.
A lot of people know you for the comedy.
Yes.
But a lot of people know you for the horror.
Yeah, you know, actually, it's funny you say this, because maybe one of the reasons why I was not as pop, I don't know if I'm popular or at the time, is because my genres changed. I could be in comedy, I could be in drama, I can be in, I've been in comedy, drama, and horror, and sometimes it was hard for them to identify me maybe, but personally, I think that's an attribute because I think that I've created a world where if you don't like to see me in a drama, you'll see me in a comedy. You can pick your genre, and there's something that from my work you can watch. So you can watch me young, you can watch me old, you can watch me did TV, film, comedy, horror. You know, there's a lot of different genres. But what's very cool is that I can show my other side and also a lot more dramatic work in horror.
Yes.
Because
and I was going to say, I was going to ask you before. I think you're probably content with the star level that you're at. Are you glad that you didn't become a bigger star?
I'm happy that I became the star that is the one people are still interested in and they seek out, and that you weren't so inundated with me that you're like, ugh, let's move on. But I'll tell you why that happened was because I never hired a publicist.
Right.
In all the years that I've worked, the most publicity I ever did was for Amityville Murders, which just came out.
Yes.
And even then, I didn't hire a publicist. So the deal is that when you hire a publicist, that's their job to get you to be like the star. And so people who know me, they know me because they like my work.
Yes.
So that to me is why it makes me very happy, because it's authentic. And I think that that's what's got, it was, you know, able to have my career for such a long time, is that I didn't overexpose myself too early. But now I feel like the fact that people know me from those films, that's really how I'm getting more work now. Like people go, oh, I saw you in that film, I want you in this film.
Right.
So I've done a lot of work. I actually have two films coming out, and I have three films that have not come out yet that I've done. And so
that's
Waking Nightmare, High Holiday, and this other zombie movie, which I'm just excited is coming out.
Do you become a zombie?
No, I don't. But I have a very hilarious role, very cool role. That's a great role. And then the films that are out right now are Amityville Murders, which is probably my best acting role.
We're gonna talk about it because I saw it. It's on Stars.
Yeah. I'm so excited about it. And then I did Wally Got Wasted. That's out also on Netflix. I have like a sort of cameo part in that, which is fun. So
Now, do your children have publicists?
Pardon me?
Do your children have publicists?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I did say to them, you know, at a certain point, you might be smart. But right now, no, because, you know, it has to be the right time and it has to be for the right project. You know, the other thing about a publicist is you don't want to get it unless you have something to show. So if she had a new show, like that's like, then it's time because you want the word to get out on that project, you know?
Yeah. Well, now's not a good time for a publicist in any case, but,
Yeah, exactly. Seriously.
But, no, I saw Amityville Murders and Amityville 2 again.
And what was that like?
That's it's a weird back to back thing. Hannah was wanted me to say how great
you
were in Amityville
watch
Murders,
first?
And I agree.
Wait, what'd you watch first? The older one or the new one?
Well, I've seen the older one, so I watched the newer one first, and then I went back and watched the newer one the other night, and just to contrast them. And first off, Burt Young is in the new one.
Yes.
Burt Young, people know from Rocky and many other movies, and he played the father in Amityville 2. He plays the grandfather, who wasn't in Amityville 2, the grandfather in Amityville Murders. How was that reunion? Did he remember you?
Oh my gosh! Oh, we had like a love fest. It was insane. We like looked at each other and went. The eyes got all teary. Yeah, no, it was.
Did you know that he was cast or not?
Yes, I did, but not until later. Like, I got cast, and then they waited a while, and then they tried to find out who was going to play the dad, and they said, "What about Bert?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh!" Like, I don't even know if he'd do it because he was in New York. I was trying to get them to also take Ritanya, and they just couldn't swing it. So whatever, that's how it happens. But I did want them both, but. Yeah, Bert loved. That's what that scene is so special because it was really a great reunion. That I love having that on film. That's where we saw each other. He came for one day, and he shot with me. So
it was wonderful. The first scene, and he's got a pivotal part at the end, but it's the first scene, and Lainey Kazan plays your mother.
Yes, and they knew each other from working together. They did a film together too, so. We were all like huddled when he first came onto set. We're like, you know, hanging out.
And the weird thing contrasting the two is that party scene is the beginning of the murders, but in Amityville 2, it's kind of in the middle of the movie. There's a similar party in the middle. Birthday party. It's in the middle of the movie. So yeah, so. Amityville Murders is closer to the original story, but they both have their merits. It depends what you're in the mood for.
Exactly. That is exactly right. Amityville Murders, to me, is more of a drama. And it is based on the true story. So looking at Amityville Murders, I look at it and I go, I don't see it as much as a horror film. Like, if you're a horror person, you may get disappointed in Amityville Murders because there's not, like, the special effects, I mean, there's a little bit, but it's not like Amityville, The Possession, which is, to me, a classic horror film. What would you say?
Well, no, Amityville Murders is more of it's not a lot of jump scares. It's more of a thriller. It's it's really seeing the degeneration of the sanity of the son and the family around him. And Paul Ben Victor plays the father. Burt Young's role in the first movie. And Paul Ben Victor, if you don't know who he is, you've seen him in every fucking movie. He's in every movie. He's best known as Spiros from The Wire, but he's been in like every movie. He was in The Irishman. He was in... I just saw him over the other day. And he popped up in it. And I thought Burt Young was mean in the first movie. Paul Ben Victor is maybe a little meaner in the second movie.
Yes. Isn't it interesting?
I was taken aback. Well, because I hadn't seen the first one in a while, and then when I saw it again, I'm like, oh, okay, Burt Young was pretty mean, but Paul Ben Victor was really, really, yeah.
Really vicious, yeah. You know, it'll be interesting. I think someday someone's going to do a mashup of the two movies with me and the daughter, and wouldn't that be cool?
I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, yeah.
Yeah, it occurred to me, I thought, oh, someday I'm going to be seeing somebody do a mashup of me talking to myself or whatever. But yeah, no, and then like, just there is so many levels. And you're right, like the similar, there's a party scene in both. And the thing that got me was the stairs, being chased up the stairs.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I get killed on the stairs, and then the girl who played my daughter was on the stairs, and that was something that got to me.
Now, the actress that played her daughter, did she come to you for advice on anything since you'd already played the role?
Yeah, you know what? She did come to me. She said she watched Amityville 2, so she had an idea, but she wanted to play her own way, which is
right.
Great. We talked about the dialect, you know, how the voice, and she was... It was so sweet. She was as respectful to me as I was with Ritanya Alda, mm-hmm. who played my mother in Amityville. So I almost feel like at one point it would be nice to be at a convention where the three of us were there, like every generation. She was lovely to work with.
And gave a terrific performance. I think the best scene in the movie is the two of you in the bedroom talking. It's powerful stuff.
Oh, wasn't that? Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of like that seeing the daughter and the what was your thought?
It was a really touching scene. It had a different tone than the rest of the movie though.
Oh, where I tell the story.
It really brought things down to. It was a different tone. It was a really, it should have been. It's a great scene. And once you go through the whole story, you see where it comes in. But
right.
At the time, it's a little jarring as far as tone.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, the acting was tremendous.
I thought you see that.
I thought everybody was terrific, and I hope you tell me Paul Benvictor was really acting because, he was pretty scary.
Yes. Oh my God. Okay, so that's a kind of a funny thing. Yeah, I can see what you're saying. Of course, he's an amazing. He's a great actor because we could trust each other and we would play, we would work together and, even like grabbing me and like, doing a lot of the stuff like we had to do. There were things that we shot in that film that never made the screen too. So, he's a professional actor, so you can trust each other. And so like one of the scenes we did, which was interesting, was the scene in the kitchen in Amityville Murders, mm-hmm. is a scene where he goes after, he just loses it in the kitchen. That's all I can say. And one of the things we shot, we worked with a stunt guy, and he showed us how to do some stunts and things. And so, but one of the things we did was, as we were doing it, like, it looked pretty violent. And I fell in one of them. And like, I had to like, get myself up, and I think people were really worried about me when I was doing this, but I totally was in control because you obviously rehearse all these actions. And he was insane, but there's a trust. Everybody knows how to act. Can I
yes.
say that? And you trust the person you're with, and I mean that in a way, like you just know you can let go because you trust the other actor, and everybody knows what they're going to do in general, so you're not that you don't improvise, perhaps, but
right.
You've got to develop your trust with your other actors.
Well, just in time, Hannah's on speakerphone. She wanted to say hi.
Oh, my gosh, Hannah!
Can you hear?
A little bit. I hear an echo.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Sorry. FaceTime, doctor's appointment, busy day.
And we were talking Amityville Murders, so tell Diane what you liked about the movie and her acting and everything.
I loved everybody's acting. I love your acting in it. It's really, I went to throw a stuffed animal at the television because the father made me so angry. He was such, like, he played such a bad person. He did it so well. It's one of my favorite Amityville.
Yeah, if you don't know... it's interesting. Like, people who know me from Better Off Dead and Bill and Ted's, and then they go see this movie, it's a different world. But if you didn't know who we were at all, you would believe that we were really messed up. And he was messed up.
Yeah.
I would want to punch him in the mouth, but... go ahead, Hannah.
I love
sorry.
Working with... Yeah, I love working with the cat. Oh, you love my dialect, right? Yeah?
Yeah, the accent was amazing.
Thank you.
But that's your real voice.
Really, I mean, I could have done, like, the character originally, the people originally came, I think, from Brooklyn, but I really felt like all these Long Island movies, that no one does this Long Island voice, and it's like, we really got to bring that into, they're real people. So, and it's always usually made, you know, as funny, you know, talking like this is a funny thing. It's like, ooh, that's goofy person talking like that, you know. But I really thought it would be kind of cool to show just a real person who speaks like that in this terrible situation. So thank you. I love doing it.
But that was your real voice. That's until you started acting, you talk like that.
Yeah, I talk like this. I should just get together with my friends and we would all talk, you know, with, what's going on? Oh, my God, that's hysterical. That would be the worst.
And, Hannah, did you see Terror Vision like I asked you to?
See what?
Did you see Terror Vision?
No, because I didn't have it on any of my platforms that I have streaming on.
It's on YouTube. Our friend Cleve Hall said hi. He did some of the monster work on Terror Vision.
Hello.
Cleve Hall, Monster Man, but I wanted to get to Terror Vision because I'd never seen that before.
I actually seen him at conventions, and oh yes, that movie. I really wish that they did not hire an Italian set crew to do the sets, because if it didn't have the visual of the picked photo of the paintings of like the naked.
Right.
People, then that would have totally been on TV already, and it would have become a cult classic right away. I think it would have been a killer. But now a lot of people like that film; they love it. I mean, I get so much. I don't know. I think the fans' base has grown.
Well, when I saw Mary Warrenoff was playing the mother, I'm like, okay, this is gonna be fun.
Right.
And
I remember eating Raoul. You know.
Oh yeah, no, I've seen that quite a few times, and I've got a friend who was in Eating Raoul. She played the dominatrix, but I'll tell her you said hi, Susan. But the one thing I want to say about Terror Vision, and hopefully we'll have you back again. We'll go into depth. You've been so patient. You've been over an hour. So I don't want to take any more of your time than I have to. But
Mark, you're awesome.
Is it true that Belinda Carlisle was the original choice?
Yes. Yes, and that you should talk with Teg Nicolai, because that's all I know, is that she was the original, their first thought was for her to play the character, which might have been based on her look, because she wasn't really acting.
Her Go-Go's look.
Yeah, maybe that's how Susie Puterman was conceived, you know, it's possible. But... yeah, so that's what I heard. And it would be interesting to get an interview with her to find out if she even considered it. I don't know what happened if she...
I'll get right on it.
No,
but
she was just the idea and they never approached her. Maybe they approached her and she said, no, I don't know.
And
but I love her. I love the look.
Oh, she's
I love
great.
That character.
Now, was that a wig?
Three wigs? Three. I had a lower wig and then it was a middle one and a top and then they spray painted it. It was, again, a moment of creative inspiration from the hairstylist. Makeup and hair.
How long did it take to put three wigs on and make it the same place?
It was very hot. It was really hot. I think, glued it all together. And, I mean, I remember we shot, and, you know, if you see a Susie Puterman, I am layered with stuff. You know, it's like thing layer after layer. We were so hot shooting because we shot it in a film studio, and
right.
The air conditioning would break. Or they have to turn the air off also for shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And then the makeup, oh my gosh. And we were like, can't touch your face, it was too hot. And then the monster was melting, it was just...
I can imagine. But
yep, it wasn't the CGI, it was definitely the real stuff.
Maybe your funniest performance. Maybe your funniest performance, even though you're after the beginning, you're not in the movie for about 45 minutes.
Yes, that's true, which is interesting, right?
Yeah, I was like, okay, where's Diana? It's a whole, all the swinger stuff and the grandpa and the, Hannah, you'll like it because it's a kid bonding with his grandpa to fight monsters.
Aww. See, this is the story of my life. I'm not in it for a long time, and then boom, you say, Monique, same thing. You don't see me, or I don't speak for half the film, and finally I talk, so.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Next time you're on the show. Finally met the end, right?
Next time you're on the show, we won't have you talk for 45 minutes, and then you can talk.
You've just brought up a point. That's true. All these films, for the first half hour, the girl is not there. And I really think that's about the guy lead. You know, they have to show who is the lead in this movie. It's a guy-centered film. You know, we have to, with the main character. So
Last American Virgin kind of the same way, too.
Yeah. Pardon me?
Last American Virgin kind of the same way, too.
Yep. Isn't that? We've just discovered something that we didn't know. This is absolutely, yes. It's how movies are written.
Diane Franklin is a second half of the movie actress.
There you go. Yes. I got to be first half, but.
Yeah, she's a slow starter, but she finishes good. She
thank you.
Good. And I think we're gonna have to. I could talk to you all day. I swear. I could have you as my co-host and fire Hannah, but I would love to do that. But I can't.
No, we love Hannah. Hannah.
I'm kidding, Hannah. I'm kidding. She's laughing, I think. By the way, we have new Hannah Bach merchandise, the Dark Mark Show merchandise. And if you'd like, I would love to send you a Dark Mark Show mask and a Hannah Bach mask if you'd like, Diane. But
I'll take it.
Okay, but before we go, let everybody know everything you got going on, all the movies, and how people can get a hold of you, and anything you have going on, anything you want to talk about, anything you want to promote.
Here's the deal, okay, because I am on social media in a lot of different places, and this is what I would do. If I just stay in contact with me, because I've got a lot of projects, I've got a lot of films coming out, and I also, you know, I promote my kids' stuff, but I also have my Better Off Dead book coming out, so if you follow me on social media, and I'll tell you where to go, then if I do a convention, things are coming up, then you'll know where I am, and plus, I'm a very funny poster. I post a lot of fun nostalgia and things that people don't normally see, and I still have. So very cool pictures of the olden days. So, okay, basically, so go to Twitter. It's Diane Franklin 80, 80, not S, but 80.
Right.
On Instagram, actress Diane Franklin. Mm-hmm. And that's Instagram. And then Facebook is the trickiest one because my Facebook page is filled. So you need to go to official Diane Franklin fan page, and it's going to be under the word group. You'll see a black and white pictures of me from my books, and that is my group page, but that is me also. So anytime I have an announcement of anything, you know, I'm going to put it on those pages and those sites, and so I hope you follow me, and
yes.
I'm just full of good energy, so I can make your day, right?
Yeah, yes, she does. What do you see the smile, Anna? She's full. She's always full of energy, and a wonderful guest. Would you like
Buckets.
People to send you? I know you're still working on the book. Hopefully, it's almost finished. But would you like people to send you maybe their thoughts on Better Off Dead or anything that?
Well, if you do wind up wanting to send me a message, you can send it through Instagram.
Okay.
But I will say this. And I'm
you're
glad to have, you know, first of all, I just want to say, I hope everyone's okay during the quarantine. This is a crazy time. I will have to say that if you've been struggling with the quarantine, you know, this is a once in a lifetime experience. And sometimes it's horrible, but then again, it will pass. And we'll look back and go, gosh, I wish that I didn't have anything to do. I wish I had time to watch that movie, that series or whatever. So this will pass and things will get better. And obviously things are getting crazy. And if it goes back again, you know, just enjoy wherever you are in your life. Enjoy where you're at because you're here and the world is grateful to have you as in this world. You know, you just appreciate yourself and just be good to yourself. Okay. Be nice to yourself. That's a really important thing I want to say. So, in this crazy time, okay, get off your back, right?
This is what
Monique says, all right? Get off your back, be nice to yourself, and you know that you are special. All right, so that's it. And
I couldn't have said it better myself. Hail Hannah Bach 666 on Instagram and Goth Comedian on all social media. Diane, we love you. Keep smiling, and
au revoir.
Hannah, you want to say something real quick?
Yeah.
Anna?
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you so much, and I'm so sorry for being late.
Oh my gosh, Anna, you can come anytime. Crash the party, okay? You next time you you know, it'll be you and me being interviewed. You interview me, okay? You're awesome. All right.
I miss you. I get a day off. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Creepy week. Bye, creepers. Bye.